Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back to Basketball Conference, the ACC Football Podcast. My name's Joey Weaver. He's Mike McDaniel. Mike, we have an ACC team playing for the national title coming up. How you doing? You ready to talk about it?
Late night live show. Scott, hit the Kenny G sound.
Just in case people are multitasking listening to the show.
Yeah, just in case.
B98.7 on the microphone. I love it.
I was going to say, let's put that out there at 12:18 a.m.
Yeah. We're gonna start by talking to Cam, and then we're going to start talking to Delilah after that.
I was going
to
say, yeah, clapping cheeks and putting on basketball conference in the background. I don't know how many people are doing that.
Oh, less than a minute into the show. Fantastic.
What a start.
Hot start. Yeah, we're live, youtube.com/@theACCFootballPodcast. It's about 12:15 Friday night, Saturday morning now into January the 10th. Mike, we're not just joined by you. We're joined by producer Scott, but especially we're joined by Mr. Cam Underwood joining the show once again. Cam, good to have you back. I don't know exactly why you're on this particular episode, but you know, the people were asking for it. So welcome back. Good to have you as always.
Man, thanks for – oh, Jesus. I was trying to tweet out the link, so I'm getting double audio. Sorry. Good to be here with you guys. Always glad to see the Super Friends in action and everything. Yeah, I got the bat signal a little bit ago, the good old hi, Cam DM. And hi, guys. And, yes, I am here for all the conversation because my – alma mater, my beloved Miami Hurricanes, are playing for the national championship next week. Well, 10 days from now, 9 days now, Monday the 19th, in our stadium in Miami Gardens. Yeah, I think that's why I'm here.
That makes sense. It all adds up for me, yeah.
Yeah, I was wondering. I mean, Joey said we haven't Cam on, and I, you know, the response was, why? Why are we doing that? And then I remembered, you know, Miami won a freaking thriller last night. Unbelievable. We were not as blessed this evening with what Indiana just did to Oregon, or what Oregon did to themselves in a lot of regards. But I'm glad we at least got one good semifinal game. And Cam, even better that we have it's almost like a fourth representative of this podcast with how much you're on with us. It's we have a member of the podcast who has a school playing for a national title. Never thought we'd see today. Here we are.
Long time, you know, friend and member of the community. You guys see me when I'm in the chat, you know, late Thursday nights or whatever, when you're doing the previews and the rollback lookbacks on Monday nights and, you know, whatnot. You know, I got to step up my Sickles pick game because I was only involved for a couple of weeks this year. You know, I'm really looking to nail those next year. But yeah, man, this is the dream. Mm-hmm. Like, this is literally the dream. It's been such a long time. It's crazy. But I mean, like, I had hair when we were good again, you know, like the last time, you know what I mean? So like that shows you how long it's been. But yeah, no, this is it's crazy. A classic semifinal. We were talking before we hit the record button. And I know that we're going to like kind of go through the game, but that last drive was an all-timer, like an mm-hmm. all-time classic. Again, regardless of anything else that happens this season, an absolute classic drive and moment. And Carson Beck high-stepping into the end zone, just incredible, just incredible.
Yeah. Cam, pleasure having you on, as always. Appreciate you joining us. Definitely a show that I don't know that we could really properly do justice without having – our unofficial fourth member of the show on with us to do it with us. So appreciate you being here late at night as it is.
Yeah.
If you're watching on YouTube, please hit the subscribe button, hit the like button, go find us otherwise audio, Apple, Spotify, Amazon, all those good places, but let's just jump right in, guys. In the college football playoff semifinal, the Verbo Fiesta Bowl, it was the number 10 Miami Hurricanes 31, the number 6 Ole Miss Rebels 27. Really was a hell of a game. I typically start by giving my full my initial thoughts or my rundown, but I'm just going to get out of the way here. Cam, what was your – just take a step back, your big picture takeaways here on how you felt about this. Like, obviously feels really good to win the game, but just general performance-wise, like, how well did you feel like Miami stepped up to the moment in this particular game?
You know, I thought that we really rose to the occasion, stepped up to the moment. The moment was not too big for us at all. And you could tell that right from the beginning because Ole Miss won the toss and said, we're going to take the ball, because clearly they were trying to get on the good foot and then put Miami in a chase mode from points, you know, and we get them three and out like that. I said, whoa, hey, all right, cool. You know, I know it wasn't a sack, but we got two guys in Chambliss's face on the first third down, you know, like that'll work for me. So, yeah, we stepped up to the moment. We had some really great performances by a variety of players and even some who, you know, are starting level players, but maybe not star players, who really took a star turn in a big moment. Keelan Marion, the wide receiver, most dynamically comes to mind. 7 catches for 114 and that long touchdown on that post route when he got butt naked wide open. But two other catches were third down conversions that were massive. And it wasn't a third down, but it was also the completion after the final third down conversion that got Miami first and goal at the 8-yard line when Carson Beck like went through 4 reads and then said, you know what, cool. You're working the stem back on that curl route. We're going to throw it in there. So, like, players like that stepping up. Marty Brown, again, you know, mixing in with Mark Fletcher in the backfield at running back. The defense, you know, played well. I thought, you know, obviously we forced them into 5 field goal attempts. They made 4. That was key. We dropped as many, you know, 4 or 5 interceptions that were right in our hands, but whatever. But overall, yeah, this team was here for the moment, and it was not perfect by any stretch of the imagination. Trust me, there were a lot of things. Like, it would have been super-duper nightmare fuel had we lost the game, but we did enough things to lose the game, right, where we didn't take advantage of situations that presented themselves. But the resiliency of this team, the laser focus, you know, when Ole Miss finally started cooking in the fourth quarter – saying, we're going to go down and we're going to score, and did, to take the lead with Malachi Toney, you know, on that tunnel, that screen touchdown. Then you give up a touchdown right back, 5 minutes to go, and I said this before we recorded, but I tweeted it at the time. I said, if I told Miami fans at 5 o'clock p.m. before the game, you're down by three, you're getting the ball with 5 minutes left and a chance to go win, you're taking that all day. And I like my team, and I like where we're at, and I think that we're going to go down, we're going to go score, we're going to go win. And we've seen Miami fail in that situation twice this year. Once against Louisville, when Carson Beck threw them the ball a billion times. And once against SMU with all kinds of penalties as well, but whatever. But we've seen that not necessarily go that way. But winning is a skill. And we've well-honed and practiced that skill, especially in this recent run. And yeah, just an all-time drive to end it. And again, this is irrespective of anything else that happens, right? That was an all-time drive. And yes, I would have preferred it in the national championship game and ended with a ring, you know, whatever. And like, I'm hopeful on the 19th that, you know, we earn victory and get our sixth championship ring also. But yeah, the team really did step up. I thought that Cristobal acquitted himself very well from a coaching, motivation, and game management standpoint. I thought that the other coaches did as well. I really feared for our wide receivers coach, Kevin Beard, when he decided that he wanted to bear hug Mara Cristobal with 18 seconds left on the sideline. Someone who I know personally, he's a friend of a good personal friend of mine. He's a cousin of a good personal friend of mine, I should say. So I've met KB a few times. We were actually at the U at the same time. He was obviously a football player on the team, had four catches for 41 yards in the national championship game against Nebraska in the Rose Bowl. So, like, you know, certified, verified thing, but he gave Mara Cristobal that bear hug, and I honestly thought that Mara Cristobal was just going to turn around and put whoever that was to sleep. Like, just that right hand was coming. Like, yeah, I was expecting that. But no, this was a true testament to the program that Cristobal has built and the embracing of the mentality of just toughness and perseverance despite any obstacle to achieve our goal. And it was really an incredible thing to see. And I'm super duper proud of them.
Want me to go next, Joey?
Yeah, go for it.
Cool. I thought we were all just going to stare at each other for the next four years. No mess.
Good podcasting. You know,
it was good. I thought Miami played really well here. I was a little concerned. We're picking nits. I was a little concerned when they stopped giving the ball to Mark Fletcher in the second half because he was cooking. And they got a little pass happy there on a couple consecutive drives, and they were punting. And I'm like, what are we doing? We're just going to keep giving Trinidad Chambliss some chances. I don't love that with how he played. And Chambliss, I thought, was pretty good in this game, too. I thought Miami did a really good job, though, of keeping him in the pocket. You know, Chambliss does his best work outside the pocket with his legs. Yeah. Obviously not the biggest guy. Got to get in the passing lanes and, you know, try to make things difficult on him. But he gets outside the pocket. He can see the field a little bit better, but he can kill you from inside the pocket, too. But I thought Miami's pass rush in this game was very good. Really made life as difficult as possible on a quarterback that came into this game white hot. I mean, he's been playing unbelievable football, and I thought he played well again in this game. Miami's rushing attack was really good. I thought they stayed balanced on offense. The one interception by Beck wasn't really his fault, like not really on him. It is what it is.
Yeah. Tipped ball up in the center field.
But my thing is, like, Beck has been really, really good for about a month. And, like, the stat sheet hasn't always shown it because it's been, like, really efficient from a passing attempt standpoint, like completing a high percentage of his throws, but, you know, maybe not for as many yards as you would think. But he's been taking what the defense has given him, and he's been, I thought, really, really good. And I thought he was really good again in this Fiesta Bowl. Just playing his best football at the best time of year. I think no better example of that than on the final drive, Cam, like you mentioned. Like, made some big time throws. The not panicking when you're in goal to go with time waning and, you know, you're get into your second, third, fourth read, and then you're like, oh, wait a minute, there's nobody over here to my left. I'm just going to go trotting into the end zone. I mean, he just played that. I thought he played that entire play perfectly in a high-pressure situation. Just thought he was really good. And, you know, we were in the Discord talking about this, and we're like, give the ball to Mark Fletcher, give the ball to Mark Fletcher, because he was cooking Ole Miss all night. I mean, he just played really well.
Yeah.
But my one overarching takeaway is I think Cristobal has been very good this postseason from a game management standpoint in a way that a lot of these coaches in this playoff have not been, right? Like, we saw it more, I guess, it was more apparent in the quarterfinal round than, I mean, of course, more teams, et cetera, more candidates than in the semifinal round. But like, I think Cristobal in total has done a really nice job from a game management standpoint here in the postseason.
Yeah.
And he's just managed the games really well. And I think it's put Miami in a situation where veteran quarterback, veteran defense, right, with Bane and Mezzador and all those guys. And they got some dudes, and he's putting them in good position. And Miami's always had the skill talent. And Beck's playing his best football of the year. I mean, it's a really good recipe right now.
Yeah, and I think that, honestly, the only game you can really look at from a game management standpoint as it being an issue was the fourth quarter against Florida State. You know what I mean? Like, and it wasn't even the whole game. It was like that last 12 minutes that was like a from a different world. Like, we were not playing aggressively. We were like, that was the one time this
very nearly let him back in.
Yeah.
Right. That kind of thing. Just like, well, scores
or whatever it was. Yeah.
Right. After we were already, you know, just blowing their doors off, and we're just on cruise control, you know, and let go of the rope a little bit. But besides that, he's done a very, very good job, and I've been very attuned to that. And like, we've talked about that previously. Remember before last season, before 2025, he came out and said, did Cristobal, hey, we've hired an analytics and game management, clock management person. They're on the staff. And it's actually, we've allocated that responsibility to somebody. We said, who? Well, we're not going to tell you, but like, one of our coaches has that in their, you know, in their responsibility set, because, you know, we go to these conventions and, you know, Sean McVay, who had just recently won a Super Bowl with the Rams, like, he has one. So like, we're taking things from NFL like Super Bowl champion coaches, and boom. So like, okay, you're intentionally trying to get better in this. And we've seen, it's taken a mango season. It's taken, okay, you got to plant that seed and grow it and till the sand, the soil, and you got to love that. There has to be sunshine and rain for that tree to grow. You know what I mean? It takes time.
That's a South Florida ass river.
That. No, it's say, very Jesus much Christ. So.
But like, it's needed to be that. And we've gone through all of the recent intentional growth steps, and we've seen them and heard them from both Cristobal and others in the program of this is what we're trying to do and grow and improve. So yeah, I know that people still want to say, well, they fumbled against Georgia Tech years ago. Donald Chaney was down, whatever, but that's beside the point. He was clearly down, Joey, shut up. But regardless of whether Donald Chaney fumbled or not, because he didn't, the error was, why are you running a play and not taking a knee? Why are you managing? Why are you putting the ball potentially in peril at all? Right? And we're not having those kind of major malfunctions. The panic timeouts are largely gone. You will more see a defensive timeout in the first half from Cristobal now, especially like in this game, when there was clear confusion among two to four defensive players on the field in a key moment, right? Okay, well, Ole Miss, they reordered in their wide receivers and they changed their splits, which means they're going to run a different concept. But like, okay, so what does that mean? Are we going to tango? Relax. Let's get settled. So you'll see that one in the first half. Usually in the second half, you haven't seen those because they use halftime for their good adjustments. But it's been very intentional along that growth path for Cristobal as a game manager. And I know that it's easy for people just to think, okay, well, we saw these things years ago. And he did the same thing against Washington State, I believe it was, when he was at Oregon, where they you know, fumble the ball. And so, like, you have multiple data points to be like, he's terrible at this, but he's grown and improved in it, and we've seen that. Before I go on, I do want to mention, Cristobal did say, and I got tipped to this, like, a little bit before the game from somebody, but I was like, I don't know that I believe you, but apparently he know the person who hit me knew somebody on the team. There were, like, 10 or 15 players who were battling the flu that they got when they went out to Arizona, Mark Fletcher Jr. being one of them. So when I saw Marty Brown go in early, because you like in the semifinal or quarterfinal against Ohio State, it was all Mark Fletcher, everything, last drive, Marty Brown, go finish. But when I saw Marty Brown come in the first quarter, I was like, oh, like he's struggling with his wind a little bit. I mean, 22 carries for 133 yards. Like he was still, you know, doing the business, but give him a little bit of a breather here, you know, like even just being out there and absorbing hits and pass pro, like, you know, those are still body blows that, you know, wear on your fatigue. So, you know, things like that. But yeah, really just, I thought it was a very good job. I thought that, you know, and to Mike's earlier point about Carson Beck, buddy, it's been 2.5 months and 7 games of this from him. And even if you want to go back to November the 1st with SMU, even in that game, and I know that there was an interception on the last play, 26 to 38 for 274 and 2 TDs. Like, yo, like, it's 2.5 months at this point. So it's not just like 1 month. It's not just like a couple of games. It was 4 games in the regular season and now 3 games in the postseason. And then if you want to even add in, like I said, the SMU game, that's 8 games. That's 2/3 of a regular season. This is not a fluke. This is not by happenstance. This is not just a flash in the pan. This has been consistent performance from him. And Commando Breezy in the chat, Beck came through in the biggest way. Yeah, he did. And he made some throws. He manages the game well, and I mean that in the best way. He gets Miami into the right plays. The ball goes to the right spot. Yeah, he missed a couple of throws. If we make a couple of better throws, Malachi Toney probably has 3, if not 4 touchdowns. I get it. I'm not going to say he was perfect. But the ball finds where it needs to be. And the thing for me with Carson Beck, honestly – and I kind of had the order wrong. From the quarterfinal, I said when he ran over two Ohio State defenders to convert a 3rd and 11 by putting his chest or his shoulder through two dudes' chest, I said that play right there, whatever we're paying him, worth it on that one play. Mm-hmm. I thought that was on the final touchdown drive. That was the drive before the final touchdown drive.
Everybody collectively, when he did that, was like, didn't know he had that in him. It was like, right. Wait a minute. Yeah.
Like 3rd and 11, they're dropping. You step up and you see the grass. He's like, we're going to have a collision by these sticks. Don't care. Ball in my right hand. My right throwing shoulder goes through your chest because I got to get there.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that just shows the heart of this player, what him just laying it all on the line for the team. And we've seen things like that. That's how Emory Williams snapped his arm at Florida State a couple of years ago, diving for a 4th down conversion. Where I thought he was short, but whatever. But, you know, he did, and, like, he snapped his arm because, like, he literally put his body on the line. The same kind, but he was reaching out the ball, and Carson was kind of tucked with it. But between that and the throws that Carson made on that last drive, those are the ones why you pay him. Those are the ones why, and I know people were mad at me. That's why I said I don't want a Lenoris Sellers. He's not making that throw on the 3rd down to CJ Daniels where he works the comeback and then turns and dives for that 1st down.
Like his 4th.
He doesn't hit that square in to Keelan Marion on 3rd and 8 for 17. He doesn't hit that curl to Keelan Marion 2 plays later to give us 1st and go. Those tight window throw. And I know that the dig behind the Malachi Toney whip route on the final 3rd down play of the game, because Miami didn't have another 3rd down from there. But on the final 3rd down conversion of and play of the game, I know that the window got large because the linebacker went to his left when Malachi Toney was on the first part of the whip route, and then he couldn't recover with change of direction, and then his man defender vacated. So you created a larger window. But those tight window big boy throws, like drop your cojones and put the ball in there and figure it out, not wide open, streaking down the field, not bubble screens and bombs, tight windows against good coverage and with great performing teams in moments that matter, you need those. And Carson Beck made each and every one of those. And honestly, on the last play, I wanted him to throw it to Malachi Toney. I wanted him to just like sack, hey, I'm throwing a laser in there. It's a tight window. Fit it in. We'll go score. And he said, nope, going to look. And then the Red Sea parted and he just strolled into the left. And it was really, really, really great to see. But yeah, you know, the redemption for him and, you know, all kinds of people like Taylor Lewan, you know, saying, oh, well, yeah, Carson Beck never performs well, you know, in big moments, 15-3 against ranked teams in his career coming into this game. Now, I know that he played at Georgia where they had more talent than other people, but Miami got more talent than other people. What are we talking about? This is not a guy who's like cost you all these games, but yeah, it was a, you know, it was a really good, a strong performance. Even with issues, even with that tip ball interception, even with dropping four of them, you know, almost nearing a season high in penalties again, like that was a shocking thing. Like 10 penalties in the game, you know, which is 2.5 times what Miami had in the playoffs, because they only had 4 at Texas A&M and none against Ohio State. But like, where'd that come from? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
since SMU had 12 penalties and 11 against Florida State, but like, you know, we'd had single digits, but like, yo, what? Like, it was, yeah, it just, yeah, it was not perfect. And, excuse me, the biggest thing that for me fighting through was allowing Ole Miss to stick around.
Yes.
Because that first half, like, we should have been up 2-3 scores.
Easy. Yes.
Easy. Mm-hmm. Easy. Like, the numbers, like, we dominated that game, but you find ways not to score, and you settle for a field goal and things like that. Like, we let Ole Miss hang around and left points on the field. And after the game, Mario said, oh, yeah, you know, I got to watch the film. Like, we should have had 10 more points. And I quoted the tweet, and I said, love you, coach. We left way more than 10 points on that field.
Yeah.
But even with all that, we found a way to win, which is just incredible.
So this, and I've got a few thoughts here. Number one, we talked about the Mario game management stuff, and you're correct. Like the massive blunders that we'd seen not only in prior years at Miami, but as you mentioned, Cam, in prior years at Oregon, even those massive blunders have not shown up this year. I think the things that we've had issues with are a little bit more micro, a little bit more like, you know, wishy-washy, iffy kind of things. Yeah. And to that end, that was a point of frustration that I had with the way that Mario managed this game. Was, and it's kind of going into what Shannon Dawson was doing on offense, was like watching this, I felt like, and it helps when you mentioned that there was, you know, some flu issues and Mark Fletcher might have been on a little bit of a pitch count of sorts, because I felt like watching Miami's offense through this game, it was like you could almost watch where Shannon Dawson got bored calling dive, power, inside zone, just duel. On a
duel. It's like, just run it.
Yeah, you're going for 6 yards a clip. Like, and it's the first half, by the way. Like, in the second half, you're just going to lean on Ole Miss's defensive line and get whatever you want. And yet, at some point, it felt like it was like, well, but we have to throw the ball at some point, right? Like, not necessarily. And yet, like, they made it a point to start trying to throw the ball at times, and it didn't always go nearly as well. And that was where drives stalled out and you kick field goals and maybe even Carson Beck takes a sack or whatever. And now you're punting. And it's like, I mean, the fact you look at this score sheet, and I mean, the time of possession and the yards per carry and some of the things, like, Miami was so much better than Ole Miss last night, I felt like. And yet, at some point, somehow, we found ourselves with Miami losing with 30 seconds left in the game. Like, that was insane to me. It was like, that was where I felt like if there was any sort of game mismanagement that went on, was like, how did you get away from the run the way that you did? But again, if that's – I mean, Mark Fletcher was the one that was really the sledgehammer that was just, you know, dragging Ole Miss's defense down the field. And if he couldn't give you 40 carries on the night, then maybe it made sense to kind of pick your spots and figure something else out around it.
I half agree, but I mean, Marty Brown had 14 for 54 in a tug. That's 3.39 a carry, you know, like 4 yards a carry, that'll work. And I just thought it was in moments where we just got a little too cute. Like, the first the first drive where we went with the Malachi Tony Wildcat Malachi package on third.
Like, did not like that play call.
Me either. Said it in, like, in real time. Dude, hand him the ball. And yeah, if it's not Mark Fletcher, hand it to Marty Brown. And you know what? I know he didn't get carries because he's a smaller running back and everything. Put Gerard Pringle in there and run stretch, right? Or run pin and pull, because we ran outside concepts and we're good. So if you're like, okay, I don't want to run our true freshman 5'10", 195 pound or 190 pound back between the tackles, right? That's not his superpower. Okay. But you have a vocabulary of run plays that you can run where it doesn't only have to be duo. But why are we going away from duo? Because duo is killing them right now. So yeah, there was a little bit of that. And it was just like, yeah, you're leaving the door open in a way that I didn't really love. But also credit to Ole Miss. That was a damn good team. They're super athletic. Their quarterback was great. Like, I made it a point in The Good, the Bad, the Ugly to, like, shout them out. I tweeted it after the game while I was still writing. I said, hey, man, like, I know losing sucks, and I know losing in that moment and losing that way with the last, you know, touchdown in 18 seconds left and things like that, I know that that stings. But y'all can hold your heads high, man. Like, that was an incredible game. It was well met. It was hard fought all the way to the end. Drove us to our limit. Like, either team could have won and deserved it. And I would have understood the losing team being gutted because you're right there. You know what I mean? But, like, that was a good darn team. But at the same time, we allowed them to stick around, especially in that first half. We really, really, really did.
Yep. The other thing I was going to say about Carson Beck, I felt like it was, on some level, I felt like he was a mixed bag. I think it was a mixed bag of really, really good with a few moments of, you know, not very good at all sprinkled in. Like, it wasn't like, you know, slightly above average, slightly below average. It was like pretty peaks and valleys, it felt like, at times.
Okay.
And I it is not lost on me. The number, how many third downs were there where it was like, I mean, it was third and seven. It was third and eight. Third and seven, and they got 7.5, and they got 8.5, and it was like, you know, they are just finding ways to get past the sticks and just keeping the chains moving and keeping the drive moving. I mean, in all those moments, I mean, it was so just effective. Like, it was as effective as needed to be. I did feel like, you mentioned the interception, it was tipped. I wonder if that interception might have been picked if it hadn't been tipped, because the guy who came in and picked it was already crashing on that route anyways. And I thought he might have jumped it even if it hadn't been tipped, which, you know, who's to say? I mean, we can say maybe is all we want. But as mentioned, I mean, the really good moments for Carson Beck, though, I mean, the way that he was composed and calm, and I mean, a couple of the times on that last drive that he got to, like, his third and fourth read and, like, had the composure and the wherewithal to do that and deliver the ball and be on time. I mean, exactly what you said, Cam. That's why you pay the money, right? Like, so I on some level, I saw someone, I think, kind of summed it up well, that, like, I think Ole Miss played like an A to A plus level game here. Miami played maybe like a C plus to B minus level game and still found a way to win. And that says a lot about this team. Really, really impressed that Miami got this done, even on a night where, again, 10 penalties and dropped all those interceptions. And, like, there were a number of missed opportunities and things that they let Ole Miss hang around, and yet they found a way to get it done anyways. That it was really impressive.
Some of those penalties.
No, just egregious. I mean, really, really bad. And there was a couple that were not called that I think normally get called against Miami, and I was very surprised. Like, Ahmad Moten, excuse me, the younger Moten brother, who's on the team now, number 99, was battling an ankle injury. He played the first couple snaps, rolled it, you know, again, came back in later. And Trinidad Chambliss, he's scrambling, and Moten's on the field, and he throws the ball away, and Moten pushes him out of bounds, like a full step,
two steps after the
ball's gone. And I'm like, it was a third down throwaway. We ended up getting a punt. And I'm like, buddy, like, I was floored that they didn't throw that. I mean, and, like, as I sit here, as I live and breathe, that was absolutely a penalty, like 10,000%. But yeah, no,
there. Forgot about that.
This was a game that Miami for the last 20 years loses.
Mm-hmm.
You're doing enough
for sure
to win, but you do just enough stupid stuff to lose. This is a game that we lose 9 times out of 10 recently, you know. But found a way to win it is really encouraging, you know, and just really encouraging. But yeah, this is definitely a game that we lost. And like, I agree with you that they played with, I mean, obviously there was a disparity of time and possession. So like when they had the ball, there was just fewer opportunities, but they played a better quality game towards what they were trying to accomplish than we did. We let them remain around. And like you just said, you had major malfunctions. For example, that touchdown on the first play of the second quarter, the 73-yard run.
Yep.
Longest run Miami has allowed since 2018.
Wow. I didn't realize that.
I hadn't heard that, yeah.
I saw the thing about they hadn't given up a 40-yard run all year.
Since 2018, we've not allowed a play of that length. So when your game, when you're, you know, game planning, right? When you have the board of, okay, like these are the probabilities or possibilities, you're not thinking they're going to hit a 73-yard touchdown run because we don't allow that. That's not in our game plan. That's not in our, I mean, never is in your game plan, but it's not even in the realm of possibilities because we don't do that and have not done that for 3 coaching staffs.
I was going to say, who was that? Ricked was the head coach at that point? Like,
That was 2018. That was Mark Ricks last year. So this is 3 coaching regimes ago, probably 1.5 iterations of this program ago, from the last time that we allowed a run like that. Bang, all of a sudden, because you only scored 3 in the first quarter, now you're down for the first time in the playoffs. What?
We were still doing ACC breakdown with Mark Rogers then, weren't we?
Yes. Like, that's what it was that long ago. But now you have that kind of a thing pop up in this game all of a sudden. And now something that was completely outside of your purview of like what could have been possible has now put you behind the 8-ball, right? And like all these different kinds of things when they pop up of hasn't happened since 18 or 15. And usually, like, when was the last time you dropped 4 interceptions in the game? I couldn't tell you, but like it never really had. Like, you're going to catch one of those, right? No. All of these little things go opposite of how Miami would have wanted them to go. Those are things that are stacking the deck against. So, yeah, no, Miami didn't play nearly a clean or perfect game. Like, you know, yeah, I think I gave some low B or C grades overall. Like, I would say probably I would grade our performance on the whole a C+, because C's get degrees. So, I'm like, yeah, we passed, but, like, we're not up there summa cum laude with that performance or anything.
There's multiple members of this podcast that are well familiar that C's get degrees.
Dude. Absolutely.
I went to Miami and I was on academic probation after my first semester. I was on Southeastern all the time. True story. I think I had I'm not going to say what the number was, but it.
I think you're past the statute of limitations. Yeah. You can tell us.
Okay.
You remember.
The first number was a 1 and the second number was lower than a 5. I'll put it to you. Okay. South Beach knew my face my first semester freshman year.
Wow. I was going to say, man, you're majoring in drinking and women.
I was majoring in being somewhere other than
women's studies.
I got a
hit the KG sound, Scott.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number 1 rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first stepfather, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
I'm failing grade in one of my choir classes, which is attendance only. I think I got a D in chamber singers. because I couldn't miss Chorale, which is with the top director, even though I wasn't a music major at the time, by the way. I was like, I cannot miss that class because that was 11 o'clock every day, even on the 90-minute days, because like that was the level of ensemble. So I cannot miss that one. But the other one, where it's grad student recital ensemble at 10 o'clock Monday, Wednesday, Friday, if I feel like it, if I don't, they call me at the end. They're like, yo, so you know that you missed X amount of days. I'm like, okay. They're like, yeah, so you know you're going to get like a D, right? I said, what? In choir?
Attendance.
For me, where I, bro. My choir award, it's on my bookshelf. You know, like I won choir awards in high school. What are you talking? I'm going to get a D in singing? No, for attendance purposes? Come on, bro. So like, yeah, I'm with you on that. But anyways, we digress. I'm sorry.
I had one more thing I was going to mention, by the way. And so I felt like one of the things that made this game different from the prior two games in the playoffs for Miami was especially the defensive line, but to some degree, the offensive line, I didn't feel like was, I mean, I'm over here saying, oh, they're running for 6 yards a play. I'm going to say the offensive line wasn't that dominant, but like, I felt like the prior two games had been more defined by Miami owning the trenches. And in this one in particular, like you had one sack. That was the only tackle for loss in this game. Like for all the talk about, you know, Reuben Bain and Akeem Mesidor and like all this stuff, I felt like this was a little bit quieter from at least from that defensive front than it had been prior. But I guess the bigger question I want to ask Cam, and I'm getting a sense of this, Mike, you tell me if you disagree too, but like, I feel like for all the talk about Miami in the trenches and what I've seen, what I've sensed in this playoff is like they're playing with like a different level of an edge to them than I saw for a lot of the regular season. And I don't know if that's just like now we've got something on the line and we're all going to lock in for 60 minutes. Whereas, you know, for the third Thursday or the third Saturday in October, we're just, where are we this week? Like, I don't know. Like, I'll give you a couple of, you know, good drives, but we're just trying to get back home. And like,
yeah,
I don't know. Do you, Mike, did you get that sense? Or it's, and Cam, you talked about it in the preseason. It was like the offensive line, like this has potential to be like best offensive line in the country level stuff. Mm-hmm. I felt like for a lot of the year, it's been like, it's been good, but not like over the top impressive, but like in the playoff. Oh, here it is.
Yeah, I was going to say it's been so good in the playoff that I'm going into this game where Indiana's been, and not to like spoil a national championship preview, but just really quick, like I'm going into this game, right? Everybody's really high on Indiana because Indiana has looked like the most complete team in the country from start to finish outside of like a Penn State game that they fumbled around. Like outside of that, they've been really good all year and, you know, played a tough game against Ohio State in the Big Ten title. Outside of that, it was like just that Penn State game where it was like, oh, they're kind of laying an egg here. And then they figured it out late. But I look at the national title game. Everybody's really, really high on Indiana because of how they're mauling people in the trenches. And everybody's looking at Oregon. They're turning the ball over. Indiana, like that 56-22 score tonight, I'll tell you what, had a lot more to do, in my opinion. Like Indiana was excellent tonight, but had more to do with the Oregon and the mistakes they made than Indiana just like running him over. Like if you look at the box score, it's not good. I mean, four short field touchdowns, three turnovers in the block punt. I mean,
yeah.
And again, Indiana efficient on offense. Mendoza was awesome. He's been great all year. Like they made all the right plays and they're really, really good. Not taking anything away, but like Miami's front and how they've played in the postseason, both offensively and defensively, I think is good enough to give Indiana some issues. Like when we've seen Indiana play, it hasn't been a lot of teams. It's been a couple teams, right? Mm-hmm. That have had the talent in the trenches to hang a little bit. We've seen them struggle to protect Mendoza. And all I'm saying is this is one of those matchups where I don't think Indiana is going to have a defined edge in the way that they've had for, I don't know, 13 out of their 15 games so far.
Yeah.
Like I think Miami will be game in the trenches, and I think it's because of how Miami's looked this postseason. And if you look at this game against Ole Miss, right, like, yes, Miami's, like, the sack numbers, all that stuff, like, it didn't look as dominant as it's looked, but also Miami wasn't playing Julian Sain, right, who's, like, a little bit of a statue in the pocket. Mm-hmm. Chambliss is a little shaky. Not shaky.
Shifty.
Slippery, shifty. Thank you. Slippery. And like, yeah, and he's able to get outside the pocket, make some plays. But like, I thought where Miami's defense did a really good job last night was like making things hard for him to get outside the pocket, right? Like sometimes he does that from a comfortability standpoint, and they kept him in the pocket, I think, more than he was comfortable with. And I think that's where Miami did a really good job last night. But to your point, Joey, like Miami's front, both offensively and defensively, has taken it to another level. I think the offensive line the last couple of games, last three games, has played the way that Cam expected them to play when we did the season preview. That is my opinion on the offensive side. I think defensive line has been pretty consistently good all year. Like Ruben Bain maybe hasn't put up the individual stats a lot of people thought, but like he's been really good. And Mesidor's been really, I know Mesidor's a little banged up, but he's been really good. And like they've been great up front. But like the offensive line especially, I think, has turned it up to a level that a lot of us were thinking that they would be in the preseason, especially Cam.
No, the offensive line is definitely taking a step forward. We basically have six starters. We rotate left guard every drive. Matthew McCoy, number 78, usually starts. And then Samson Okudlola, who was a five-star offensive tackle 3 years ago, is playing the other series, the even series at left guard this year. We just wrote. And then the other four positions are, you know, set it and forget it with Markell Bell, James Brockermeyer, Anas Cooper, and Francis Mawinoa. But yeah, we rotate the left guard literally every drive. It's okay, McCoy's drive, Okanola's drive. So I think they're definitely playing to that level that I expected all season. A couple issues last game. Was very disappointed with Anas Cooper, four-year starter, captain. Two false starts within three plays in a key drive late in the third, fourth quarter. Like, what are we doing, buddy? Like, you're a captain of this team, and not just in the graphic every week. You're one of the four players we send out to the coin flip every game for the last 2 years, buddy. Like, we can't have that from you. You know what I mean? Like, you cannot have that. So that was a little bit of a something else that we did that could have cost us the game, you know, especially when you stack it with these other things. The defensive line, the numbers were not huge against Ole Miss, but we definitely changed our rush plan to contain Chambliss. And even with not necessarily getting home all of the time, and there were major national names who were like, Ruben Bain, no show, he's terrible, like, take him out of the first round of the NFL draft. And other people were dunking on him, like, so he had six pressures, which was the most of anybody on either team today. What are we talking about? You know? And, like, it might be surprising to you, especially Joey, since you mentioned this earlier. Did you know that Ruben Bain has 8.5 sacks this season? Because he does.
A little bit lower than I would have guessed, because it feels like he has about half that in three playoff games now.
He
like,
literally does have half that in his playoff games. Right. But you're thinking like, yeah, through the regular season, it was like, yeah, that 2-3, he got one late. But like, yeah, half of the sacks have come in the playoff, and then Akeem Mesidor has, you know, 10.5. Keontae Scott with 5 from his blitzing nickel safety position as well. But like, yeah, like the performance is there, and honestly, the defensive line for Miami, it has performed all year as I expected the offensive line to perform. Like, even in the opener against Notre Dame, I was like, I'm very confident that our offensive line can be, but the defensive line was killing it. I was like, oh, like, I knew that there was talent and everything. And Akeem Mesidor is like a 6-year dude. He's been here for 5 years or 4 years after transferring in from West Virginia. He's battled some injuries. He's one of the older guys on the roster, but like, he's healthy and looking explosive like when we recruited him in years ago, right? And then Bain, who was a shell of himself last year after hurting his hamstring on the second play of the opener against Florida in 2024, returned to his, you know, elite, you know, freshman defensive player of the year in the conference kind of a thing. So, yeah, the numbers were not where we would have wanted them. Like, we would have liked to have, you know, 6-7 tackles for loss and like 4 or 5 sacks against Ole Miss, but especially with them specializing in their spread air raid up-tempo kind of a system, they're going to just be spitting that ball out to the edges quickly enough like teams did early in the year where, like, you just don't have time to get home. But you're still affecting him in these other longer passing situations. And yet, even though that's not necessarily like a tangible, we had this many da-da-da-da-da kind of like counting stats, I thought the impact was definitely there in big moments. But still – they made some adjustments, and then they figured out a way to mitigate that on that final scoring drive that they had to take the lead late in the game. So, yeah, it wasn't perfect, but I thought that we were impactful, but definitely not as just dominant as, you know, before, you know, in the first two rounds. Like, it was just like, you know, you go and play the Turkey Bowl around Thanksgiving with like your little cousins, and you know, you got three or four of them hanging off you as you go score a touchdown. That's basically what it was along the lines in the first two rounds, even against Ohio State. Like, they just couldn't hang with us at all. It was definitely not that. I think a little bit from scheme from Ole Miss, but yeah.
Yep. Mike, anything else in this game before we talk one more game?
There's a chat in there before you get to, from the Weasler. If I had to guess, what percent odds would I put on Damari Brown playing in the national championship game? Since it's the national, so Damari Brown, one of our starting top rotation corners, has missed several weeks with a foot injury. He was doubtful to play and then ruled out on game day.
It's probably one of the biggest storylines going into a title game right now, right? Is the health of healthy cornerback.
Oh my God, yes. OJ Frederick left the game in the first half. He didn't play in the entire second half. Then you get Xavier Lucas with a dubious targeting, in my estimation.
Former Wisconsin great. Sorry.
Yeah, exactly. But he's going to miss the first half of the national championship game because that happened in the second half. And so, like, Miami went to a true freshman, Jabari Antoine, a four-star kid from Westgate, Louisiana, one-time LSU commit in that game, because, like, we needed dudes to play corner, and, like, that's his position. So, you know, we're 14 games into the season. I know that you're still a freshman and you haven't played major snaps, but, like, we brought you here to do a job, buddy. Go do the job. But to the point of the question, I would say, especially considering this is the terminal final game of the season in the sport writ large, I mean, I think that he's probably going to play if he's able to walk. You know what I mean? So I would put it at 85-90%, to be perfectly honest. Like, I'm not sure that – like, it would have to be something where if Damari Brown were to try to play with his injury, it would cause long-term physical damage. You know what I mean? Like, this might be a life- and career-altering choice if you choose to try to play. That wouldn't be a smart idea. Absent like that kind of prognosis or diagnosis, yeah, I think he's probably going to play. And to Jorgensen in the chat, yes, Miami did play against Mendoza last year when he was at Cal. He went 11-22 in that game.
Nuts.
That crazy game. Yeah, W banger, where I was up till who knows what time in the morning, Sunday, writing Good, Bad, and the Ugly, because that game didn't start till 10 at Eastern.
Yeah. He was like 11 of 22 for like 385 yards and four touchdowns or something.
Just he hit like four or five explosive plays, and that was about it.
It was
that game was that insane.
Much, guys. Shut up. You exaggerate for comedic effect. You guys hurt my feelings. Now I got to go look it up.
Hey, they won that game. I mean,
Miami did that. Yeah, after being down a billion to two. Yeah. 11 for 22 for, 285 and two tuds. But yeah, in that first half,
that was one digit off.
You weren't far off. Yeah, that was, Nuke Jacket, ACC After Dark legend game. My God, you're not lying.
That was great.
Or whatever. But yeah, so yeah.
Hell of a performance from Miami. I think they showed why they were favored here, and they deserve to be. I think my single biggest gripe from this game was that they stopped running the ball nearly as much in the second half, and me and producer Scott had Miami second half -1.5, and that did not get home. And for that, I will never forgive Miami.
I saw you guys bet that, and with the way Ole Miss was playing, I was like, better you guys than me. By the way, I lost the under 27.5. That was criminal, by the way.
First half under.
Ole Miss kicks a field goal from 58 yards. It was a career long for that kid. Makes it with
11 seconds left, or whatever.
Time essentially waning in the first half. And then he goes on to miss his first chip shot field goal of the second half. I'm like, where the fuck was that? Like 25 minutes ago. Like, what are we doing here?
Yeah. Two doinks, one doink out, one doink in. From this kid who was, they called him a robot because he never missed. I was just like, great kicker, you know. And yeah. he's already said that he's going back to Ole Miss. He said, yeah, I can make money in NFL. I am enjoying my time in Oxford, Mississippi. Sign me back up for the Grove.
If you're, I was going to say, if you're a kicker and you're making good money, just keep making good money in college. Like that goes for probably a lot of positions, but especially special teams. Like, my God, just stay in college as long as you can.
Yep. 1,000%
Yeah. Great kicker. Carniero. Great kicker, though.
Yeah. Yep. Miami 31, Ole Miss 27, which leaves us with one final game. Mike, I think you and I probably come back and do a little bit more of a thorough preview. We're getting plenty late into the night here, but certainly wanted to get Cam, your thoughts as we go into the national championship game. We're doing this here a couple hours after the end of Indiana's thrashing of Oregon. I don't think that the final score really fully tells the story of that game. I mean, there was clearly, 28 points worth of turnover created cheap points, I would say, that went to Indiana there. But Indiana, man, looks like an absolute machine.
Better team won still, yeah.
I think Miami has some more talented players, but the level that Indiana is playing as a team right now is it's going to take a lot, I think, to stop them for 60 minutes. How are you feeling about that game? Obviously, at Hard Rock Stadium in South, you know, it's a home game.
Yep.
A lot of storylines here. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling excited for the opportunity to return to this kind of a stage. It has been a long time in the desert of mediocrity to abject poor play. And that's the main thing, man. Just like grateful for this opportunity, grateful to be on this journey with everybody and to be able to share this with so many Canes fans. And there's like a lot of younger Canes fans too. Like people always say like, you know, like, oh, well, it's just people who are around for, you know, 2001 and everything. And like, yeah, maybe they've seen the documentary, like the U from the original 30 for 30 series, like on ESPN all those years ago. You know what I mean? Like there's that, but like, it's also passed down by generations, and like even people in Miami who don't go to Miami like root for the city of Miami. So like, yeah, we have a fan base and everything, but like if people are talking about bandwagon Fairweather fans, when have we been good enough to get bandwagon Fairweather fans, guys? You know what I mean? Like we're some, I mean, not the longest suffering. I'm not saying that we're the Red Sox 86 years between championships or anything, but like it's been a good minute. So that's the first thing. I'm just excited to be in this spot. This is a damn good team. We're playing a damn good Indiana team, clearly the number one team in the country, the only undefeated team in the country this year. We're going to have to play a cleaner game if we want to earn victory, period. And I make the comparison of Indiana to insert powerhouse high school football team here. Like St. Thomas Aquinas here in Fort Lauderdale, right? Yeah, they're more talented, or they're comparably talented, probably more talented, you know, than like your random, you know, whatever town high school. But what they'll do is if you make a mistake, they're going to go spend your money. Then they're going to get a three and out. Then they're going to block a punt. Then they're going to spend that. Then they're going to get another three and out. Then they're going to have a long punt return and a short touchdown drive. Now all of a sudden you look up and it's 28-0 and you're like, I'm a touchdown away from a running clock. Like, I don't feel that we played badly. You know what I mean? Like we've hit a couple passes. Like we maybe missed a run fit here or there. Like we're not playing bad. Like they only have 65 yards of offense, but like, we're getting our doors blown off all of a sudden. And to their credit, and that is high praise that I'm giving to Indiana, right? Where if you make a mistake, they're going to take the ball and spend that money and put it in the end zone on you, man. Like they're a team of old dudes. Like they got their whole starting lineup is like 22 to 26 years old. Whatever. It's college, pay the kids, you know, da, 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 da. But like they're veteran dudes. They've seen stuff. They have that adult grown man strength now too, right? They're not just as fickle mentally as like a 19 or eight, like most 19 or 18 year olds are. So yeah, we're going to have to execute our responsibilities very, very well. This, and I said it when we made the playoffs and I didn't know how many games we're going to be, But I said, every game from here on out will be against the best team we've played all year, whether that's one game or four. And we're in that spot where, yeah, we're playing the best team we've played all year. And the other previous best team was Ole Miss, and before that, Ohio State, and before that, Texas A&M. That's just the way that it works. So, you know, I think that they – oh, or Indiana does present specific scheme issues. The thing that I'm most – that gets my initial focus is the health of Miami's cornerback position versus Indiana's receivers – particularly who's at 13, Surratt, with all the jump balls and back shoulder fades.
Back shoulder's been lethal.
That, you know, and they got, you know, a couple other dudes too, but like him specifically in that passing engagement, who do we have who's going to be on the field to contest that? O.J. Frederick did a good job against Carnell Tate and Jeremiah Smith in the most part, but still Jeremiah Smith's going to get his. Cool, you know, whatever. But is he going to play? Ethan O'Connor, transfer from Washington State. Okay, is he just going to be the guy? Is it going to be Jabori Antoine starting as a true freshman in the national championship game because Xavier Lucas is out and whoever else is injured? Like, that's the first thing. And then, yeah, like, just not getting confused along the offensive line with their simulated pressures and twisting stunt games up front. Those are the two things off the top of my brain that I'm looking at as major points of engagement going into this game. But, you know, there are still personal friends of mine who are excoriating me because I predicted that Miami was going to lose in the Cotton Bowl Classic. I didn't love it. I didn't want it to happen, but like evaluating that game at that time, I thought, okay, Miami's going to lose. And they're still, oh, you were wrong. That it comes with there's the price of doing business, you know, or, you know, sometimes you're wrong. But after that, I said, I'm not picking against Miami again this year, no matter how many games they play. And so I'm going to stick by that. I, you know, spoiler alert, if you're watching or listening to this, I will be predicting Miami to win this game in the national championship. But just like I said with the Ole Miss game, where I predicted Miami to win by a touchdown and they won by four, this is going to be a hard-fought game. This is not going to be a blowout either way. I feel very confident that 56-22 is not going to happen for either team in the national championship game. And I stand on that. So, yeah, I think that this is a very good matchup if we do what we need to do. I think that we can be in a good spot to earn victory here. I'm very excited for this opportunity and look forward to the next 9 days to comment and opine before sitting down with my friends and fellow Hurricanes and watching the University of Miami play for a national championship in our own stadium. But you know what? We're going to be the road team, so we're going to be in the other locker room.
Which is hilarious.
It's a pro stadium, so both locker rooms are, like, top tier. You know, it's not like, you know,
funny,
stadium where Hayden Fry famously painted the away locker room pink to make the players passive or anything.
I think it was Iowa, yeah.
Sorry. So it's not anything like that. But, like, yeah, for a home game in our stadium, we're going to be in the other locker room and on the other sideline, which is going to be odd, but – whatever. If that's what we have to do to be there, then sign me up. So I'm done there. I'm going to wrap it up. But, yeah, looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a great game. Very, very excited.
I'm with you. And that was the thing that stuck out to me with this game tonight that Indiana won over Oregon was, man, you cannot give that Indiana team an inch because they will take a mile every time that you do. And yeah. So it's like if Miami isn't going to play a clean game, it might get early. It might get that's late it. Early, you know.
Yeah, that's it.
If they do play a clean game, I mean, I think these teams can hang in the trenches with each other, and we could be in for a very fascinating national championship game.
Banger.
Just storyline after storyline there, and incredible. So I'm looking forward to it. Mike, any initial thoughts on the game before we work on getting out of here?
Yeah, I mean, that's it. It's Indiana doesn't make any mistakes, right? So I think from Miami's standpoint, you can't play the game that you played in the semifinal, right? Like a CC plus game and expect to win. Like,
no.
that's not going to happen, right? If you play the same game you played in the semifinal, you're going to lose. You know, you got to play your B plus A minus game at minimum, right? Like, Indiana does not make mistakes. And if they make mistakes in the national title, you have to take advantage of them, like with touchdowns, not field goals. So, yeah, mm-hmm. It's Indiana proved tonight, like, what happens when you make mistakes, right? They can compile quickly, and they score touchdowns off of those, right? You give them a short field, they're scoring touchdowns. Like, they're mm-hmm. not kicking field goals. Mm-hmm. So if Miami gives them short fields, I mean, like you said, Joe, it could get late early. But I also agree with Cam. Like, I think Miami's in a position with, you know, their offensive line, defensive line, how they played. And I've hinted at this already. Like, they're in a position where I would be very surprised if there was a lopsided score in the title game, right? It would mm-hmm. take multiple turnovers, I think, on Miami's part in particular for this to get out of hand. I mean, I think Indiana is the best team in the country. Like, I think they're the most complete team. But I think if, you know, you kind of took the matchup in the semifinal between Ole Miss and Miami, I think Indiana would much rather see Ole Miss and Miami. Like, I think with mm-hmm. with Miami's offensive line, defensive line, I think it presents a challenge to Indiana very similar to the one they saw against Ohio State, which we saw how competitive that game is. I think Miami's going to have a great shot to win the title. I really do. So,
and yeah. Honest, just to piggyback on that, I said it, you know, before, even though I predicted what I predicted, I picked Miami's lines on both sides as better than Ohio State's. So, you know, like, and I agree with you. Miami is built in a way to present issues for Indiana in a way that Ole Miss is not necessarily, outside of just having a singular dynamic player quarterback.
Mm-hmm. Agree. I would agree with that. Mike, that's all I got. For Cam, anything else before we work on getting out of here?
An hour three. Scott, Will has soccer soon. We did it.
Proud of you.
Scott trying to get literally any sleep tonight. We will sleep. We'll let him off.
As SVP says, it's the sleep math starting to work against him. So we're going to wrap it up.
I've been doing sleep math my whole life.
Once you have kids, it never stops.
Yeah. It does not. Cam, this has been awesome. Really appreciate you taking the time joining us as always, but especially, you know, late tonight. Obviously, though, know how excited and how meaningful this is for you.
You should
as a longtime Miami fan
and alum, man. Yeah. So and I, you know, while Scott's doing his sleep math, I actually caught only a maybe 90 minute nap last night. Because I was so wild, I was up all night. I think I slept mm-hmm. from 5:30 to 7, and then I was I caught a nice nap in the middle of the day. So, like, I'm wide awake again. But, like, I was so wired after that, like, I couldn't turn my brain and my body off. So, truly a great time to be a Miami Hurricane, man. You know, and this is just it's great. It's just great. So, and always being here with the Super Friends is great as well. Scott, I'm gonna stop talking so you can go to sleep. Been a pleasure, guys. Anytime you want to have me back, I will be here. Go Canes. Let's go win a national championship.
You want to tell the people where they can go find your stuff real quick?
Yeah, stateoftheu.com, at Underwood Sports on Twitter, at The State of the U on Twitter as well. We have our story stream up running for the entire college football playoffs, and we're adding to that every single day. And we'll be continuing to do so as we are, you know, confirmed already into the national championship game and digging into all of the narratives, you know, between these teams and commentary and analysis as we go into, through, and after this game. And hopefully late Monday night, I get to post a piece that I'm going to pre-write sometime soon about the Miami Hurricanes being national champions.
I was here thinking you might have pre-written it years ago.
Mentally, but, like, honestly, we've transitioned to a different back-end architecture. So, like, what I did then, it might not have even transferred over. But and there was never a time to, like, be realistic with that. You know, this is like, you know, me building my Barbie dream house. You know what I mean? Like, come on. But now that we're actually here, yeah, we're going to be real about it. Scott, I'm sorry. I'm stopped talking about it.
Oh, it's fine. You're not the problem, Cam. They are the problem.
I think there's a Taylor Swift song about that. I'm not a big listener, but, you know, I'm told.
You dabble.
Who's to say? Cam, you're the best. Appreciate it. Best of luck next Monday, and we'll have you back on again sometime soon.
Sounds like a plan.
All right. Let's get out of here. We're going to come back. We're going to preview the national championship game featuring Cam's Miami Hurricanes. And that has got to be music to his ears. In the meantime, we're on Twitter at FGRS Joey, at Mike McDaniel SI, at BC Podcast ACC, at Underwood Sports, at the State of the U. Go find all of it out there on Twitter. Apple, Amazon, Spotify, wherever you go find your podcast in audio format, we're there. We're at youtube.com/@theACCFootballPodcast. Please hit the subscribe button if you haven't already. We'd appreciate that. Hit the like button. That would be much appreciated as well. Send us an email, basketballconferencepodcast@gmail.com.
Nailed it.
Thank you. More content, by the way, coming with our next show. Might be some season-long awards, might have other stuff. News. There's been a lot of newsy stuff. Apparently, everybody is in the transfer portal. Everybody is in. All of your team's players are in the transfer portal, and also your team has gotten everybody out of the transfer portal. So we will try to summarize that a little bit more concisely next
time. Real quick, Joey, for the awards, Steven from Section 103, he's going to get his money's worth in terms of his advertisement dollars when I bring the awards to the table.
Hell yeah, you will. By the way, Section 103, go ACC at checkout, 10% off your first order. Fantastic hoodies like this. Very comfortable, very soft, perfect for this time of year. Highly recommended.
Also, home field apparel, while we're at it, too. Home field apparel.
Also that, yeah. Support our sponsors. Links in the description of this episode on YouTube or in the audio format. Go find them all.
You do see how you're the problem.
No. Nope. It's not.
Just plug in advertisers.
Just, you know, trying to sell merch. Moving merch is all we're doing.
Making some money. A little side money. Trying to buy groceries for my kid. Our kids.
Mike, do you want to talk for 20 or 30 more minutes about anything in particular? Or
I think we're good before Scott kills us.
Let's get out of here. All right. We will come back. We'll talk to you very, very soon. Until next time, for Mr. Mike McDaniel, for Mr. Producer Scott, for Mr. Cam Underwood, I am Joey Weaver. Thank you guys so much for listening. We'll talk to you again very, very soon. Congrats again to the Miami Hurricanes. Talk to you very soon. Until then, go Canes and go ACC.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only. Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.